I would like to introduce our first speaker for the Atmosphere of Recovery. Welcome, Pete G.
Hi, everybody. I'm an addict. My name's Pete. I don't like all this. I'm not used to it. But I was telling everybody, a lot of people I know, that I wasn't nervous about getting up and doing all this. But I am nervous. What I try to go with is that I'm an addict, and I believe everybody out there is an addict. You know, I don't have... all I can share is my experience, strength, and hope. I have nothing else. You know, I can't make stuff up. I can tell you my story and my some of my opinions and my experience with the Atmosphere of Recovery. You know, I the whole time I've been waiting for this workshop, I thought I was going to share on acceptance. So I was kind of thinking about that, and I found out yesterday that that's not what I was speaking on. But it doesn't really matter, because I've been around for longer than I ever thought I would be, and I have some experience with the Atmosphere of Recovery and a few other things. And I'm very grateful to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. My home group is the Glad to Be Alive Step Group in the Rock Creek area in Washington, D.C. And I grew up in Washington, and I did just about all of my using and running in D.C. And by the time I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I was dying. I had been living on the street and using to live and living to use for a very long time, until I couldn't go on anymore. I couldn't hustle anymore. And no matter how much I used, it just didn't seem to be enough. And I ended up going to jail for a little while in Montgomery County. And when I got out, I started doing the same stuff all over again. I went to my probation officer, and I told him he may as well just lock me up, because I'm on my way back anyway. And what he did for me was, he had some experience with people in recovery, and he gave me $2, and he said, you can take this $2 and go up to the 7-Eleven, buy a bottle of wine or whatever you want to do, or you can take it and catch the bus to this detox center. And what I did is I took one of those dollars and I bought a beer, and I took the other dollar and caught the bus to the detox center. I went into detox for 7 days, and then I went into a treatment center, that was December 4th, 1989. I haven't used since, by the grace of God. And when I first was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, was in this treatment center, and I didn't talk to anybody or get into anything like feelings or any of that stuff ever in my life until I got here. And I met for the first time an addict in recovery who had a lot of clean time in this treatment center. And he kind of told everybody his story, and I believed him. And I believe that if that dude could get clean, then maybe I can get clean for a little while, or at least I was willing to try. And I've had that willingness to learn how to live life on life's terms, and to live clean and become a productive member of society. And I've been doing okay with it for a while. And I started coming to NA, and I didn't have a... sponsor for a while, and I used to sit in the back of the room and I used to shake something like this, but this is from being nervous, but I used to shake from coming off all these drugs for a long time. And I'd sit in the back of the room and shake and sweat and not talk, and leave when the meeting was over, sometimes before that we even close the meeting, and then I would go home. And but the thing about it is, when I stopped using, all these feelings started coming back, and I couldn't use over it. I could have, but I knew it wouldn't work. So at that time, in the area I grew up in, everybody was talking about getting real and talking about your feelings and not holding nothing back and share what's really going on. And that's what I started to hear. And one time I heard a guy who was kind of this big tough guy, and he got up and started sharing some real intimate stuff about himself, and he kind of broke down crying in the meeting, and that gave me the ability to take a chance and to share honestly and from my heart for the first time ever. And you know, the atmosphere of recovery in that meeting was just that, an atmosphere of recovery. All my life I was in an atmosphere of insanity and lying and cheating and, you know, everything that goes along with active addiction. And when I started to listen to what people were sharing, and I've been to some meetings where you actually feel the recovery in the room, something like this, you know, where people share. I was in an earlier meeting, and a guy was sharing, man, and I could feel it, exactly what he was saying. And you know, I think that when addicts come together, more than, you know, I couldn't get this feeling from anybody else except addicts in recovery, you know, where the therapeutic value of one addict helping another, there's nothing else like it. And the fear and the ability, the fear started to subside, and my willingness started to grow, my hope. I started to get that hope that maybe I could, this thing would work for me if I continued to do the things that I was told were necessary in order to stay clean and learn how to live life on life's terms. And that started with, you know, getting a sponsor who, I never wanted to hug anybody. And, you know, that's the one thing I did not like about NA, was that we hugged in meetings. I hadn't been hugged for a long time, and before I got to NA, I never got hugged, really. Not because nobody wanted to hug me. Maybe that was part of it, especially during the end, but I never felt any compassion, really. I was unable to, like, feel that kind of stuff, but I began to feel it here. I walked into a meeting one time, I saw this guy who knew me, and he asked me how long I had been clean. And I had an old army jacket on, and I was using. And he asked me how long I had been clean, and I said, I'm not clean. And the guy gave me this big bear hug, and he told me, that's all right, there's some coffee and cookies, have a seat, you're right where you're supposed to be. And it stunned me, man, because for the first time in a long time, I was welcome somewhere without worrying whether I was going to get thrown out. And that atmosphere, that was so important that I wouldn't go up and get coffee because I didn't have no money to put in the basket. And so I had to hear somebody say, you know, this stuff is free, and the basket's going around. And if you don't have any money, don't worry about it. Because if you stick around here long enough, you'll become employable, and one day you'll be able to put some money in that basket. And people used to take me out to dinner when, you know, in early recovery, I wouldn't go out because I didn't have any money. But the sponsor I got, he grabbed me, and he for a long time, he bought me stuff for dinner. And he said, you stick around, you'll be able to buy a newcomer something to eat after the meeting. You know, and all that stuff has come true. And part of the atmosphere of recovery, I'm going to really try to stay on this topic, is when we walk into a meeting and the coffee's ready, or you walk into a meeting and the literature's on the table, and the speaker shows up, and the person sharing has a good narcotics, not necessarily a good Narcotics Anonymous meeting, but a message, but a Narcotics Anonymous message. And the message is hope and the promise of freedom. And the way to find the way to become all that NA has to offer is through the steps. That this is a spiritual, not religious program. And that if I wanted to become, you know, one thing I heard a guy say one time was that what he wanted to become in his life in recovery was to become a good man. And that struck a chord, because I used to see people when I was using, and I was ashamed of what I became. You know, I became a negligent father and an absentee father. Left my daughter when she was a kid, just a baby. And I stole from the family, a little bit of family I had. And my father was the neighborhood addict who at any given time you see him laying on a street corner, and I'd drive by with these guys and they'd say, there goes your old man, Pete, you're going to grow up to be just like him. And I'd say I'd never be like him. And you know, after a lot of using and a lot of running, I became like him, and in my opinion I became worse than him. Because he was on the street falling out, but he was there. But I left, you know, I left my daughter, and I had to, you know, trying to live with that when the drugs stopped working was impossible. And you know, they say we have to get clean for ourselves, but part of me got clean because I was going to probably end up killing myself from trying to live with the, you know, what kind of person I became. And if it wasn't for Narcotics Anonymous, if it wasn't for this fellowship, I would probably be in prison or dead by now. My liver was all messed up when I got here. I had hepatitis C. I was in bad shape, and Narcotics Anonymous and the people in Narcotics Anonymous saved my life, and my sponsor helped me to become a better person by guiding me through the steps, and I helped myself become a better person by having the willingness to change my personality and change everything about myself. I had to learn how to live. All I knew how to do was live on, you know, live the street life. I knew how to do that. I had to learn to forget. I had to unlearn that stuff and to learn how to become a good man. Somebody who I could look in the mirror and appreciate, you know, and be okay with, and you know, and have some integrity, and to have some morals, and to keep commitments, and to not run all over the place cussing at everybody and acting like a fool. And I did plenty of that. And you know what? I have become close a lot of days to that good person that I want to become. My daughter is back in my life. I have good people around me. I have good friends. I aggravate the hell out of a lot of them because I can be kind of aggravating sometimes just playing around. But I'm able to love people, and when I got here, if you said that you love me or wanted me to say I love you, you could forget it. Forget it. I wouldn't say those words. And if I did say them, I was bullshitting because I wanted something you had. And That's the truth. I didn't come up here to make shit up. This is just... But, you know, I'm able to do those things. I'm able to tell people I love them. My daughter right now is 16 years old, and 3 days ago she was in a juvenile detention center for shoplifting, and now she's in a treatment center 2 days clean up in Annapolis. And the detention center scared the hell out of her. At least she's putting on a good show that it scared the hell out of her, you know. Because when I was 16, I look at her and I see me, and and she's crazy. And I asked her, I asked her what, you know, for the first time, I asked her, well, I didn't really even ask her. She told me what she was using, cocaine, PCP, ecstasy, and pot, and alcohol, 16. And it's still out there, and the disease is going strong. And I thank God every day that I love being in recovery. And I try to carry the message to the newcomer that, it can, you know, if this is your first meeting, it could all stop here. Telling my daughter that, you know, you never have to come back to one of these places again. I thought that I would never be able to get clean. And here I am, one day turns into months, months turn into years, and years just keep on happening for me because I keep coming back. And I think another big important thing about coming to meetings and that atmosphere of recovery is continuing to carry the solution and to carry the message that no matter what happens, you never have to use again. No matter how far down you think you are in the gutter, you can always get back up. As long as the willingness is there to do the things that are, you know, they weren't suggested to me. They said, Pete, you got to do this or you're going to die. And I think, you know, you hear it all the time, but if an addict like me can get clean, and if you'd have told me 12 years ago that I'd be standing up here talking like I am right now, I'd say you were crazy. But, and I'm just an addict, just like everybody. I'm not anybody special to come up here, anybody in this room, come up here and share their experience. And one thing about being up here is I get to share a little bit of my opinions. And believe me, if you keep going back, you get some opinions on. And one of them was that one of them I hear about is that high bottoms and low bottoms in recovery. And you know, I don't think there is any high bottoms or low bottoms. You know, we all come in, no matter what or how much we use, we all come in here with the same kind of pain. And it doesn't matter whether you came in here smoking pot or you came from prison shooting dope. It don't make no difference. We come in here with the same amount of pain, and that's why we talk about it doesn't matter what or how much we use. All it's about is carrying the message and helping each other stay clean another day. And that's what meetings, to me, are supposed to be all about. I've been to meetings. My family came from Ireland, and I've been back to Ireland 3 times since I've been clean, 3 or 4. And in Dublin, Ireland, they have great meetings. And they carry the message is going strong. And another part of Ireland, the message is there too. You know, and NA is all over the world. And no matter where you go, I believe in the world, you know, if the message is being carried, then the right atmosphere of recovery is there. You know, and I'm real grateful. I'm engaged to be married, and and that's a beautiful thing. You know, I never thought I'd be willingly getting married. That's a long story, but. I'm getting married because I'm in love with this lady, and we help each other. And you know, like I said, I have a lot of good friends and a lot of people that I've seen come in here and get the message. And somehow I sponsored a guy for 18 months. And he worked the steps with me, and one time, and he wrote his fourth step, and he did it. We met to read his fifth step, and the fifth step he wrote, I thought, was perfect, you know, because it was just like mine. The words were not the same, but when it all came down, it came down to self-centered fear. And not even 3 months later, he OD'd and died because he forgot about that first step, or he made a decision to forget about it. See, when I got in here, I came in here ignorant. But after being here a while, I learned how to live clean. And if I went back out and used now, I would be a volunteer. It wouldn't be something that the disease, I have a choice whether I'm going to use or not. And I choose not to on a daily basis. I have too much to lose. You know, and when I share, I like to share to the newcomer, because the most important person in any meeting is the newcomer, worldwide. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I tried, but I'm not real good at, but I do try in meetings where I see somebody I haven't seen before come in, I like to go up and give them a hug and say welcome. And I do that a lot, but I could do it a lot more. You know, because I still have that thing in me that keeps me a little bit back from people. And I'm working on it. But to be acknowledged by somebody when I was new, to walk into a meeting and somebody come up to me and say, welcome, you know, or I saw you at another meeting, or even say hello to me by my name, meant so much. You know, meant so much to me. Somebody recognized me. When I was the last few years of my using, the only people that wanted to come around me were the police. And they wanted me. I had a couple of them tell me before they retired, there was this one in particular, we called him Kojak, and he said, Gavin, before I retire, I'm going to get your ass. And he didn't. But he tried, and so I think it's very important to say hello, to acknowledge the newcomer, and to carry that message that to keep coming back, and to reach out, and to you know, sponsor people, no matter how crazy they are. I sponsor a lot of crazy people. And when I was first coming in, all the crazy people kind of came towards me to hang out for some reason. And but now things are different. I went from being unemployable to starting my own little business, and it's doing pretty well. I've gained some self-respect and some morals and principles, and I'm able to keep commitments, and I can look people in the eye and be okay with who I am. I can meet my fiance's parents. Believe me, that's a big deal. I would not. You know, when I used to go out with girls when I was using, I'd meet them down the street from their parents' house, because I was bad news, and I knew it, and they knew it, and they didn't want me around their daughter. And it feels pretty good to be able to be welcomed into a family. Now, I have no family. My parents died when I was 16 or 17 years old, and you know, I really didn't. My father, I never knew him. He was always tore up all the time. And you know, I remember when my parents died, I never told anybody. I used to hang out with guys who were much older than me, and they used to teach me how I was supposed to behave, not if I went to jail, but when I went to jail. This is what you're going to need to know before you go to jail, because they knew I was going eventually. And I remember seeing them getting high, and I'd say, I never going to get high like that, the way they were using. And I remember one guy telling me, don't say that. Don't never say never, because, and sure enough, I used every which way you can use, you know. So I never say never anymore. And I never talked to anybody about my feelings, never talked to anybody about my parents dying, but I would go away into a corner and cry. And then if I felt real bad and was walking down the street and seeing somebody who I knew, I would put on this mask that I didn't care and I was okay anyway. And Narcotics Anonymous has given me the ability, through being in the atmosphere of recovery and people sharing their experience, strength, and hope, and sharing from their heart, you know, not trying to talk a whole lot of... I listened to the people who walked the walk and talked, and just didn't talk the talk. And that has given me the ability to share stuff with my sponsor and it pretty much anybody. You want to know anything about me, I'll pretty much tell you a lot of it. I'm not afraid to do it. And one thing I've learned through being in recovery is that it helps to share. It helps to get that stuff out, and it helps to have faith in a higher power. And I'm going to say this, and I'm going to sit down. I think I'm almost out of time, right? The 12 steps have given me a new way to live and have given me a spiritual way of life. And if it wasn't for the God of my understanding working in my life, with my daughter being in treatment, and when she was out there running, I'd be so worried, I'd be going crazy. And because of Narcotics Anonymous and the God of my understanding, I'm able to have a little bit of peace and be okay, because I just have that. And thank you for letting me share.
Again, I'm an addict. My name is Carolyn. Our next speaker is Jonathan B. We'll give him a warm welcome.
Good evening. I'm Jonathan. I'm an addict.
Hello, Jonathan.
And it's a pleasure to be here. This is a pretty good atmosphere. And I want to thank Pete for setting the tone for me. You know, coming up in this program, I got a sponsor, and the way he does things is the opposite. When a topic is thrown out, when something is, an opinion is put out, he always comes to me with the opposite side. So if someone was to say right, I say left. Open, close, like that. So it got me in a habit of taking the approach of when something is brought to me, I look at the other side of it first, and then come back full circle. You know what I'm saying? And the same thing with this atmosphere of recovery. Now I noticed, see, like what Pete just displayed was calmness, you know, to me, cool, you know, sort of guy, and, you know, he don't get emotional, he's talking, and, you know, things happen. Now I'm the opposite. You know, I get emotional, you know, I get all caught up, and the atmosphere is anything but recovery. You know what I'm saying? It gets like that. But then when I came around, that's how I was. When I got here, you were just told to do certain things, period. They didn't ask for my opinion, what I was thinking, or how I thought I could fix and make a better mousetrap. They didn't want that. What they wanted me to do was sit up front, shut the hell up, and pay attention. And the type of guy I was, where I came from, see, those are the kind of things that make me want to defy you. What? Who do you think you're talking to? Do you know I'm Johnny Barnes? Well, they didn't really care. And that's what they wanted me to know. They wanted to get that point across to me right away. We don't give a damn who you are. And it says in the literature, we don't care who your connections were, what you had done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in your problem and what you want to do about it, how we can help. And I didn't know how to get no help because I just came off the street. So the best thing I could do was sit down and shut up and listen. But I didn't like being told that by anybody, especially somebody younger, you know, somebody, you know, that I wouldn't even have spoke to on the street. We couldn't even have cop together and they telling me to shut up. I had problems with that. But I was watching everybody else pay attention. I was watching everybody else listening to them. I was watching everybody else going for the coffee, hugging and smiling, and I thought something was suspicious about that. You know, something's not quite right. You know, it's some kind of cult or something, you know, and they're going to spring it on me in a minute. You know? But that's not what happened. What happened is more and more of the days went by, and I began to put one day behind the other and became months, years, so forth and on. And as a result of that, I've been in a lot of step meetings. I have been in a lot of open discussion meetings. I have been in workshops and conventions. I've been in the other fellowship. I've been everywhere that this thing could take you, being clean. And I've seen a lot of things happen. And I remember one time the guy was talking about a meeting and how the meeting was set up and everything. He said, "Man, I have never been to a bad meeting." And then somebody else said, "Keep coming back." You know, and I didn't get that then, you know. Didn't understand it. But now I do. And the reason why I'm saying that, because, let's see, this is a real good time for me. It's like this every year at the same time. Number one, I just celebrated a birthday last Thursday. Right, I turned 52. Okay. I'm coming up on my 15th year anniversary on May the 10th. Right? And, you know, I just got a lot of good things going on, and they all seem to connect right around this time. So by the time I get down here, I'm kind of psyched. You know, I'm liking it. And this is the second time that I've been to Ocean City that the amusement park was open. You know, I mean, the weather was good, you know, because it's been raining, windy. We thought we was going to get stuck on the island one year. You know what I mean? Because it was just torrential rain. It was like, we might need a boat to get to the convention center. But this one, and I forget exactly which one it was, but the weather was just nice. So everything just seemed to be perfect. Like the atmosphere was preordained. And I even got up this morning. I didn't party last night for some reason. I was tired. So I got up this morning and went to the sunrise meeting. And I had the pleasure of doing that one time. And I remember doing that, and it was cold as the well digger's water. And I just knew nobody was going to come out there to an atmosphere like that. You know, it was nice today, but it was cold as I don't know what, man. It was about 8 people out there, and I was like, okay, this is cool. And I was the only speaker, and I was like, I'm going to run through this real quick, and we're going to get some heat. Didn't happen. Seemed like 5 minutes before they started the meeting, people just started coming, a whole line of people. They took all those lawn chairs and all them blankets out the hotel, and they was bundled up with ski caps on and masks and gloves and everything. And I was like, God, I can't believe this. You know? They coming out here. And then the guy who was setting up the mic, he looked around, he saw all the people. He said, "Man, you sure better have something to tell them this morning." And I was like, thanks, you know? That's how I was feeling. But it's wonderful. And I'm talking about, everything I'm talking about has to do with the atmosphere. Because, see, what we see most of the time is the finished product. We don't see all the stuff that goes into getting it there. We don't see the personalities that clash with the principles. You understand? We don't be in the group conscious when you got aggressive and forceful personalities who mean well. You know, they have the best intentions. You understand? And they said the road to hell was paved with the best of intentions. You know? So what actually happens is the conscience of the group takes over an individual. Individual's personality should not survive the group's conscience. But trust me, sometimes the group's conscience, they say, when the group's conscience is decided, then that's God speaking. Well, I don't know about that all of the time. Because some of them group consciences, when they came out with some stuff, I don't know if God had anything to do with that. I don't know if he would claim that, you know, but people be claiming him and attaching him. You know, like, and I'm just talking. I'm just coming from my... told y'all how it was, right? You know? Just talking, right? I've sat in meetings. I've been to a lot of them, man. I've sat in meetings, and I hear somebody come out, and they give all praises, and they shout out a whole bunch of names and spiritual, religious connections and so forth and on. And they set the tone, then they come up with a whole bunch of garbage, a whole bunch of non-NA stuff, a whole bunch of their stuff, and then they finish it with the same accolades of that high power source of their strength and all this in the name of NA. They put it in the front, a whole bunch of bullshit in the middle, and then they put it in the back. And some of, yeah, I'm just saying, some of us have been around long enough, and what happens, whether you want it to or not, is you develop a 12-step ear. If you are doing step work, if you have a sponsor, if you're praying to a higher power, if you're involved, like my man said, he could feel recovery. He could feel it in the meeting. That's what's going to happen to you. Now, if for some reason you ain't doing those things, then you won't feel it. And then everything will come off the top of your head. Nothing from the gut. You would have intellectualized it, read it, put the quotation marks, period, all of that good stuff. Just like the book. You know, and I used to have a habit. I used to want to get the book, the dictionary, and all those things and bring it up here and go through it like we was in class. Can't do that. Because I didn't recover like that. They didn't give it to me like that. They was giving it to me breaking the emotional foot off in my behind. That's what they were doing. Kicking me square up in my behind. And saying, shut up. When we want to know how to get high, we'll call on you. We know you know how to do that. Look at you. It hurt my feelings. But I ain't had no feelings when I was anesthetized and under the influence. I ain't feel shit. You could have said anything. I'd be like, all right. Okay. But now I come in here and you take the drugs away. Now everything I feel is raw. Some of the stuff, I don't even know what the hell it is. And I'm feeling it. I'm like, what's going on? And that takes an older, experienced member to tell me. But I got to be willing to ask. And then after I ask, I got to be willing to sit my ass still long enough to get the answer. To get the solution. And if I don't like what they said, if I don't believe or trust what they said, then all I gotta do is watch what they do. If they don't use, I don't use. I ain't gotta understand the shit. I ain't gotta make sense. But they ain't get high. And neither did I. Real simple. Yeah. You know, but in all of that process, in the beginning, they told me, they said, man, get that chair, move that chair. Real simple. I started moving the chairs. I was in service. And service to an atmosphere was larger than me. I'm dealing with people I don't even know. We moving chairs together. You know, they see me moving a chair. Actually, they even spoke to me. You know, I came in a meeting and they called me by my name. They remembered my name. Things like that for moving chairs. And we used to be able to smoke then, so we had a lot of ashtrays, dumping ashtrays. I used to smoke then. You know, those are the things we did. And as a result, the coffee, you would always know who the coffee maker was. Because if this shit wasn't no good, who was the coffee man? Let me talk to you. And if it was good, you know, same thing. Who is the coffee maker? You bought it. You know, you're a good man. That kind of thing. That was a real good position. A lot of people ain't know it. They thought it was demeaning. Uh-huh. They didn't realize that put you on the map. They might ask you to chair the meeting after that. You know how to do the coffee, you sure could probably do this meeting, you know. But if you fuck up the coffee, you ain't gonna get asked to do nothing else for a while. You probably get asked to call your sponsor. If you have one. If you're using one. You know, all that's part of it, I'm trying to tell you. See, we have an atmosphere in the rooms. We have protocol. We have things we do in the rooms to provide that atmosphere so that anybody, whether they're still using or not, right, people, can come in here and get that message of hope. And some people say it's just a suggested program. Well, I beg to differ. Because in some addicts, if you're an addict like me, high echelon, manipulative, dope fiend, then that shit, that ain't going to work. You know, because I'll find a way to get around that. You know? So you got to tell me straight up, no, you can't do that. Because if you do, why? Because of this. And I go away. But if y'all, it's just a suggestion. They told me if you get in an airplane and you go 6,000 feet, put the parachute on and you jump out, I suggest you pull the ripcord. Don't do it. You ain't got to do it. You ain't got to follow the suggestion. Well, I like to think it goes a little further. It's more than a suggestion. There's some stuff you have to do if you want to recover. And there's some things we have to do to maintain the atmosphere of recovery. So don't start talking about the Gestapo, the NA police, gonna give you a ticket if you do that, and all that. Understand that some people want this atmosphere. That they've been on the other side and caught hell and came in here under the lash, whipped into submission. And they don't want to go back. So they might have a little enthusiasm and it might be a little aggressive, you know, they might need to have some help because they want to stop the bullshit. You know, and they don't want to be a part of the bullshit. They ain't about it. And here you come with it. And they come back, and you're like, hey, what's wrong with him? What's the matter, man? It's you know, some stuff just ain't acceptable, is what I'm saying. Because if we accept everything, we become like a doormat. And you can just scuff all over us and do anything. Well, them NA, them, you know, they ain't going to do nothing. They real humble. So that's when people run off with the money and stuff like that. Groups money and areas money and stuff like that. Yeah, they do that. Because they think, you know, what the hell? They ain't going to do nothing. What are they going to do? They do stuff like that. And I'm talking about it because that's the shit that bothers me. Because they wasn't doing it when I got here. They doing it now, though. You know, I heard a whole lot of places. Stuff like that happened. Meetings folding and stuff. Why? Because of the trusted service. Why? Because the meeting is as good as this trusted service. Trusted service can't be trusted. What the hell kind of meeting you think that's going to be? What kind of atmosphere is that? Free for all. What the fuck? You know, we can do this, we can do that, what the hell? We'll just have a group conscience and make it so. We don't give a damn if it affect NA as a whole or anybody else. This is what we want to do. And we are autonomous. We can do this. They use the tradition backwards and forward.
Yeah.
You know, double-edged. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. All in the name of and going to do the right thing. Just never quite get there. Get some other shit. Stay here. And we gotta come in there for that. You know, so I'm the kind of person. And sometimes I have to walk away. Sometimes I have to calm down. But for the most part, I'm not. So if you see me in the back of the room, if I put my hand up and I want to share, I really want to share. Something is eating me. I done heard some crazy stuff, some non-programmed stuff, and somebody done sanctioned it, and then somebody else starts sharing behind it. Somebody else starts sharing, and it's going around the meeting, and nobody checked it. You know, and it's different ways of doing things. We could do things like Pete do it most of the time, real calm, you know, you can. And sometimes people will hear that, they'll listen. If they really know they made a mistake and you point it out, they might say, oh, okay, I didn't know. And that's all right, you know, and sometimes I'm like that. Sometimes I can assume that position and I'll do that. But then most of the time, when by the time you got to a group conscience point, we didn't pass that. You know, because people that came with their group and they already know what they want to do. They already got it in their mind and they got a group behind them. They're going to make it happen. Yeah, yeah. You know, we're going to make this a no Lord's Prayer saying me. They don't say that in the convention, but they say it in a lot of places I go. And I learned to let stuff go because people going to do what they're going to do. And they say, well, they're getting clean. So, okay, I leave it alone. They're getting clean. So if I don't want to participate, I don't have to go.
There you go.
And I'm just back away and let them do what they want to do. And if they stay clean, then the atmosphere is okay. It's just that my atmosphere ain't okay. See, because and that's another thing my sponsor did. He told me to transfer everything from the group's perspective to my own. So like when we do traditions, we do steps of traditions. People say steps are for the maintenance of the addict, the individual, and the traditions are for the maintenance of the group. Well, my sponsor says that I can use the traditions for me too, individually, as personally. So when I leave the convention and go outside, that I can carry the atmosphere of recovery with me. So that when I'm on my job and my boss is breaking the tradition, instead of trying to punch him in the mouth or run the job myself, I can practice some of the recovery I learned in here, in that situation, and maybe I can keep my job. Keep working there. And truth of it is I've done that. They say practice these principles in all your affairs. I have done that, and I've experienced the results of it, where they had to retract and back up and come back and apologize to me. You know, I still had the same emotional fervor, and I wanted to go, just didn't. Held still for a minute. Talked to some of y'all, a sponsor, got some feedback, and came to a meeting and let it go. Did it to them in the room and was able to go back to work and maintain my composure until I put one foot in front of the other, and then they stopped noticing all the negative stuff, and they stopped paying attention and found out, shit, that I was pretty good worker, that I did know my job, and that some of the customers was actually saying good things about me in spite of the picture they had in their mind. And see, that same thing happens in the rooms, it happens in the job, it happens at home. My family has a different picture of me than people in the rooms do. I wonder how that happened. Because see, it's real easy for me to practice these principles in here with y'all, especially if y'all are doing it too. We all doing it together, then it's some camaraderie there, and we all kind of, you know, going at it, and it ain't just all on me. But then when I get home, and I'm dealing with somebody who ain't got a program, you know, who don't care about the program. In some instances, they hate the program. And I got a whole another situation there. So then I need to have as much atmosphere within me as I can to keep dealing with them or find something else to do. Deal with somebody else, move on or something, or just deal with myself. And those are the situations that I have been faced with in the latter part of my recovery. You know, they say practice the principles in all your affairs, and when you're doing everything you're supposed to do to the best of your ability, and still shit still happens. Stuff still happens, and you can't control it. Step one. You know, you ain't in control, but the stuff still happens. So my sponsor told me, he says, you're going to get angry again. It's what do you do when you get angry? What's your reaction? How are you going to act to it? I had a situation, and I'm going to talk about this for a minute. with my significant other, my wife. And we were going through separation. She was gone. She had moved out. And I had legally done everything I was supposed to do to make that separation legal and binding. And went to her to serve her the papers and found out she was living in a car. And I got three boys by her. And that kind of blew all my bitterness, anger, hatred against her away. Because in spite of all that, I didn't want to see her like that. So I went to my sponsor and a very good friend of mine, sponsee, and I talked to them about it. My sponsee, he made the comment, he says, "Well, what would you do if something happened to her? How would you be able to live with yourself, knowing you could have done something?" I was like, "Damn, I don't want to talk to him. Let me call my sponsor." He ain't got as much time as me anyway. I'm his sponsor. He shouldn't be telling me that. No. Call my sponsor. He says, "Now you have an opportunity to practice these principles in all your affairs." Damn, I wanted to call his sponsor. I didn't want to hear that either. But the reality was, I had to do that. And I had to do it, like both of them said, without expecting anything back. Child. And guess what? I ain't getting nothing back either. Nothing, you know. And they here at the convention, boy, my whole family. I still ain't getting nothing, you know what I'm saying? I got a shirt from the Harley store. That's all right. Yeah. That's cool, though. Because the reality is, from what y'all have shown me, I've become a product of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know if it's good or bad, but whatever it is, it's a product of Narcotics Anonymous, because this is where I've been almost 15 years. And this is what I do, and whatever y'all do affects me some kind of way. And when I leave out of here, that's who I am to everybody else. And most people know that I'm not the same guy. I used to stand on the corner at Georgia and Rittenhouse in front of Sam's. I still see people out there. I don't stand out there no more. When I go to Sam's, they know I'm not the same person. They know I'm coming in there to purchase something, and it ain't going to be, "Can I get a case of Nick's until payday?" You know, it ain't going to be none of that, because I had it like that. I could go in there and get a case and roll out, and he'd see me Thursday. I don't do that no more. So when they see me coming, they know I'm coming to get some juice, energy drink, you know. I might even play a number or something like that. And it's very rare, because I'm not up in that area. So when I am, it's on a rare occasion. They just know that I'm not the same person. I'm not standing out there trying to see who's coming up with what and where we going to go, and all day long. I'm not there. So y'all have done this for me. Y'all have created this inside of me. And this is who I've become. And sometimes I'm the one who you don't want to see. I'm the one who you do not want to hear from. I'm the one that you hate to show up at the group conscious. I'm the one, when you walk in the meeting, you see I'm leading the meeting, you say, "Dang, I'm not going in there because I'm tired of hearing that, blah, blah, blah." Sometimes that's me. Now, I'll tell you. But that's who I am. Y'all made me like this and then don't want me to tell you. Don't want me to pull you up. Yeah. Tell me, "Look, this is how you got to do it. Do it like this." And then when I tell you, you don't want to hear. Because somebody told me, I ain't get this on my own. I learned how to assassinate people's character. Why? Because people was assassinating mine. I learned how to do it. Now, I'm not saying it's a good thing, and I haven't done it in a while, but at some positions and some points, it's appropriate. Especially when somebody think their character is above Narcotics Anonymous. They think they arrived and they got up there on a pedestal somewhere. And sometimes they need to be told that raggedy ass is an addict. And that they need recovery just like me. Yeah. Call their sponsor. And I hope you get feelings when I tell you. Because I do. I get feelings when you tell me. But But I go right and talk to somebody, and they say, oh, what did they say? Okay, well, how come you didn't do that? Oh, okay. I went to a meeting in Philadelphia, and they had all these signs on there. Don't talk about no drugs. I don't want to hear none of this stuff about drugs and narcotics and all that. This ain't this kind of meeting. And I got feelings. Put my hand up and start sharing. Came back to D.C. and with my chest out, told my sponsor, yeah, I shared in that meeting. He said, well, why you ain't just do what they said do? Why you ain't just follow the atmosphere? It was already set. They had it on the wall. Don't do this. And I was like, they offended me. I got feelings. And I had to let them know. And early on like that, you know, they used to go up one side of me and down the other. I didn't even know they did it. You know? I'd be standing next to them at the end of the meet, talking about, thanks for sharing. They'd be like, keep coming back. y'all don't know what y'all created, because I kept coming. No, but I really love this thing, man. And humor is healing. And I have a lot of fun in here. But for real, it gets serious. It gets serious because this is a disease that's incurable. And it's fatal. So sometimes when somebody's pulling you up, because there's different ways to do it. Sometimes you can blast that somebody in a meeting and share behind them and tear them down. You know, that's not good. You know. But you can pull them to the side and let them know. And then if they come in the meeting and do it again, then you got a right to tear their ass up. Because evidently they didn't hear it, you know. Now you got their attention because their ass is ripped and they got pain and they're like, oh, what did you do to me? Now they're ready to hear. You understand? Maybe they'll call their sponsor and curse you out. And they'll start getting some help. That's what happened for me. You know, I know some of y'all like me. Is it time to go? Am I getting too big? How many minutes? Two. Okay. Let's see, we're not going to talk about 2 minutes. Okay, that's hard. That's hard to do. No, but for real, this journey is all that I have been concerned with here lately, not the outcome. I'm not all caught up in how's it going to end. You know, I'm not even caught up on how it began. You know, but I am concentrating on how it's going, because I was told I could change it anytime I want. If I don't like the way shit is right now, I'm the one who has the power to do something about it. And if I need to use all of y'all, if I need to use a format like this, a group conscious, prayer, meditation, steps, sponsor, whatever it is, then if I want to change it, I have all of the tools in which to change it. But what happens to a guy like me is somewhere in between knowing what to do and doing it is a wide-ass space. You know what I'm saying? And if it wasn't for that space, if that space didn't exist, I probably wouldn't come in here no more. The hell would I need y'all for? I'd have all the answers. But because I don't, because of that, I must come in here to get connected, to find out how to apply the knowledge. You know, to use it in all my affairs, not just some of them. The ones that favor me, not the ones that favor you. You know what I'm saying? Because at the core of my disease is self-centeredness. And then I suffer from compulsive, obsessive behavior disorder. So if I'm self-centered, I'm not a little bit self-centered. It's large. And for anybody who's in that space, they need a lot of help. They're going to need sponsors, high power, steps, network, meetings on top of meetings. They're going to need this in order to deal with that. And every day ain't as good as today. Today is a pretty good day. You know, so far things have been pretty good. But there have been some rough times. It goes up and down. You know, and I'm learning what to do when I'm down. The term trusted servant, that's what it means. I trust you to serve me when I'm down. You trust me to serve you when you're down. And thank God we ain't all down at the same time. That makes it simple for me, and I'll keep coming back. Thank you.